The following is a presentation of Remnant. Finish the work you have started in me as I'm on my way to you.
Hi, this is Jerry Gutz, and welcome to Remnant Church Online. We hope that you'll find today's message challenging, full of hope, and most of all, practical. If you have questions, comments, or need a little more help on any of the issues that are raised by today's message, drop me a line at jerry@remnantchurchonline.com. Thanks a lot. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jerry Gutsy.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if you were at my house or not. No. Actually, our house was nice and quiet. It was just me and Lynette and my youngest son, Critter. And all the grandkids were up north, and we had to Skype and watch them open gifts. And so it was nice and quiet. But I have had Christmases where it was one screaming match short of a Jerry Springer episode. You ever been there? Done that? Yeah. I didn't want that. What's wrong with you? I got you, you got me hangies. I don't even use handkerchiefs. Why? So here are the hashtags for today's message: Nightmare of Xmas, Anger, @JerryGutsy, @RemnantChurch. And again, please, please tweet the message. Put it on Instagram. Put it on your Facebook feed. We want people who aren't here, and there's a lot of them today that aren't here. We want people who aren't here to see the message. You know what? You never know who you're going to touch. You really don't. And so it's amazing when Jeremiah and Frank preach, I tweet the message. And when I tweet it, automatically it was my Facebook page. And I'll get likes from all kinds of people that I know have never been to church. Not this church, maybe not any church. And yet they're getting the message. They're seeing what God's saying. So, hey, let's not cut anybody short. So we're going to talk about the nightmare of anger. And really, we're going to talk about how to get over it. 3 weeks ago, I preached one of the Sundays up here, and I talked about the nightmare of disillusionment. And I used this quote, and it's very fitting for today, too. The Christmas season is marked by greater emotional stress and more acts of violence than any other time of the year. Have you ever noticed when people get mad, things get broken? Maybe just around my house. I used to throw wrenches and stuff when I was working on the car, till I realized that now whatever was broken is still broken, and now I have to get out from underneath the car and go get the wrench. I threw a wrench one time, and it bounced and hit the concrete, hit the wall, and bounced back and hit my car and put a chip in the paint. One time, it put a chip in me. That was really bad. I've counseled married couples who had fights that were so often and so violent that all of the family pictures in their house were in rubber frames for when they threw them. That's not true. Anyway, I did actually tell a couple that. I said, are all the pictures in your house in rubber frames? And they looked at me like I was from another planet. And they said, why? I said, because you guys fight so much, you must be throwing things at each other. Well, no. All right. In anger, one nation lashes out another nation, and a war starts. Or if you read the headlines this week, their internet goes down. You can't tell me we didn't do that. You can't tell me it's a coincidence that North Korea's internet went down, and we don't know anything about it. I think it's great. Somebody throws a punch and a nose gets broken. You express too much anger when disciplining your child, trust can get broken. A lot of things get broken when we get angry. So how do you fix it? It happens in churches. Church unity gets broken. Relationships get broken. Many angry outbursts ruin relationships. Jesus addressed this in his Sermon on the Mount. Now, if you weren't here when we did the series on the Sermon on the Mount, I encourage you to go back, download the podcast. It's a series called Manifesto. And it's all about the Sermon on the Mount. Because in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus gives, R.W. Stott said that in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus gave the closest thing to a manifesto he ever gave. Basically, the whole Sermon on the Mount is Jesus saying, if you're going to call yourself a Christian, this is what it looks like. If you're going to say you're a Christian, this is how you should live. And let me tell you something. If you can read the whole Sermon on the Mount and not get convicted, you're either not paying attention or you're ready to go to heaven all by your own some because you're perfect. I'm guessing if you read the Sermon on the Mount, there's going to be a lot of, ow. Oh, I wish I hadn't read that. Ow. Oh, crud, I got some work to do. But here's what he said. He said, those who follow him will be as distinctive as salt and light. You ever have food without salt? You ever go to the hospital? Have to have food without salt? Ugh. Ugh. It's just nasty. You're like, why am I even eating this? I put salt on Jell-O. No, I don't. You ever go into a dark room? And you think, oh, I smell gas, light a match. No. You ever go in a dark room and think, man, I wish I had a light? We'll stand out. If we're really Christians, we're going to stand out. People are going to look at us and say, well, there's something different about them. Now, here's the thing. We've kind of got that messed up because we think that they'll look at us and they'll say, oh, he's different. I want to be just like him. Look, I don't smoke and I don't drink and I don't chew and I don't go with girls who do. If that's all you have that sets you apart, you're missing something. And we used to do that. We used to think that, oh, that's what made us holy, was we didn't go to movies. And we didn't drink a beer. And we didn't do this. And we didn't do that. And that's what somehow made us holy. And Jesus is saying, it's not about the don'ts. It's about the do's. Do love your enemies. Do love your neighbor. Do things for others out of the kindness of your heart, not out of guilt. Christianity is all about the do's. We get that mixed up. Somehow we think that if we are somehow just not doing the don'ts, we're okay with God. And God says, you know what? There's so much more to do than that. So he gives all of these things about how to live, and he gives all of these things about, you know, ways that we should be loving. And then he says this in Matthew 5:20. But I warn you, unless your righteousness is better than the righteousness of the teachers of religious law and the Pharisees, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, to put that in perspective for today, that would be like me saying today, unless you are better than somebody like Billy Graham, you're not going to get to heaven. Because Billy Graham is one of those people. I have very few heroes in Christianity. You know, big preachers and stuff, I just don't idolize those guys. I don't follow them. But Billy Graham, I look up to. Because he's a man who's done it right for all of these years, never a hint of scandal, and said his mind, never once pulled the layer of truth away, always said exactly, this is this, this is that, this is how God wants it. I respect that. That's my kind of guy. Some of these guys on TV now, they smile so much you wonder if they even have a nervous system. You can have Cadillacs in the hills. Hallelujah. You know what? Those guys start talking like that. I'll find a football game. I'll watch full contact Tiddlywinks. I'll watch anything other than watch these knuckleheads. Their hairdos carrying a Bible. And they don't, and honestly, they're hurting Christianity. Because people are somehow thinking that that's what Christianity is, and it's not. I could name names, but I won't. But you know who I'm talking about. See, the scribes and the Pharisees and the religious leaders of the day, they were all about, how do I look? They would have the phylacteries they carried on their forehead that had all the scriptures they had memorized and walked around with, you know, hey, check me out. You know, today you'd carry like a 50-pound family Bible. Wear a cross made out of railroad spikes around your neck. Walk around judging people. Yes, yes, you're going to hell. You're going to hell. God bless you, you're going to hell. You may be okay. We'll see you later. And that was their idea of being godly. I don't know if you've read very much about Jesus, but that's not how Jesus acted. Jesus went to him and said, you know what? You may be going to hell, but I can fix that. You may be hurting and lost. Let's work on that. Jesus is all about loving people, but giving them a standard. The woman caught in the act of adultery. They brought her to him. drug her naked through the streets. They said, look, we caught her in the act of adultery. They didn't bring the guy, by the way. And unless I missed a memo, it takes two people to commit adultery. They left the guy there. Jesus just got down and wrote something in the dirt. We don't know for sure what he wrote. Mike Warnke said that he thinks he wrote the names of the girlfriends of the guy that brought the lady. And he says, hey, with anybody here without this same sin, you cast the first stone. And they all dropped their rocks and ran away. And he could have just left it there. He saved the lady's life, could have left it there. But he told her, go and sin no more. Knock it off. I saved you, but knock it off. Live a better life. And that's what Jesus says to us all the time. Look, quit worrying about the way it looks. Let's start worrying about the way it acts. We got these guys that buy these little rice rocket cars. $4,000 worth of rims on a car that struggles to do 60. Big coffee can exhaust on it that makes a lot of noise and doesn't do anything. Beep. I was just the opposite. In high school, I had a 65 Rambler Classic. It was one of the ugliest cars ever built. And I kept these weird dog dish hubcaps on it. You know, it just was ugly as all get out. But the thing ran like crazy. It was fast. I won't tell you the activities we engaged in, but there's a reason to make your car go fast. The statute of limitations is over on that, so I'm okay. Here's the thing. God's not interested in your good looks. And if you look like me, you say, oh, hallelujah. God's not interested in your outside, the way you look on the outside, like whether you carry the right Bible or whether you say the right things. He wants to know what's inside of you. He wants to know what's at the heart of the matter. When it comes down to just you and God, how's it going? That's safe to say the average American would say that they have a pretty good heart. Well, I think I'm okay. I like this. We say, well, you know, I'm a good guy, but hey, look, I'm no murderer. Really? That's the line of demarcation? We've got murderers and good people. Well, I've done a lot of things, but I've never murdered anybody. Okay, well, that's good. Murder is not the line between good and bad. But that is pretty much an ancient way of thinking. There is a lot of people that think that as long as they don't murder anybody, they're okay. Jesus says, no, there's more to it than that. So he starts out, and look at verse 21. He says, you have heard that our ancestors were told, you must not murder. Now that's from the Ten Commandments. I think that's a good commandment. In my job at the sheriff's office, I go after people who break this commandment. Okay? This is my full-time job. You break this commandment, I'm going to come to your house. With guys that have really weird bracelets for you. This is what I do. And everybody in the crowd, when he's giving the Sermon on the Mount, everybody in the crowd understands this. Don't murder. And that was the Bible. But then they added something else that the scribes and the Pharisees had said. And at the end of verse 20, it says, if you commit murder, you're subject to judgment. One is the Bible, one is the way it's taught. And so what he's saying here, if you commit murder, you're subject to judgment, that's what had been handed down for years. They understood that as much as they understood don't commit murder. What they're saying, what the scribes and the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were saying was, if you commit murder, we're going to drag you to court. If you murder, we're going to get you and put you away or kill you ourselves. They were used to that. They understood that line of reasoning. Then Jesus really messes it up for everybody. Because we can say that now, right? We're okay. Anybody here murder anybody? Don't raise your hand, please. Because, again, I don't want to go to your house. Okay? But I'm pretty sure I can say that nobody here has murdered anybody. I've murdered a ham a few times. I've murdered songs many times, but I've never murdered a person. But then he says this, verse 22. But I say, if you're even angry with someone, you're subject to judgment. All right, thanks, Jesus. I appreciate that. If I'm even angry with somebody, I get angry all the time. I drive down the road and get angry. I'll walk through Walmart. Jeremiah says, anybody ever go to Walmart and get angry? Every trip. You just look at some people and think, ooh. You are not smart enough to breathe. I mean, what is wrong with you? You're just looking like, standing there at Walmart, honest to goodness, the other day, looking at coffees, you know, the little Keurig coffee things. I'm looking at him trying to figure out what flavor I want, and this lady came and stood right in front of me. Now, and it's not like I'm against the other aisle. I'm kind of toward that thing. She kind of weaseled her way in front of me. And now look, I'm not exactly a small person. It's not like she didn't see me. She saw me. She didn't care. Now, thankfully, she was short enough I could see over the top of her. But do you ever just want to lay hands on somebody, forget to pray? It's like, well, God bless you, sister. I hope he blesses you with an iron pipe. So what's Jesus' point? How's he tying in anger and murder? Well, he's saying that anger is dangerous. Anger is dangerous. Let's look back at Matthew 5, 21 and 22. You've heard that our ancestors were told, you must not commit murder. If you commit murder, you're subject to judgment. But I say, if you're even angry with someone, you are subject to judgment. If you call someone an idiot, you're in danger of being brought before the court. And if you curse someone, you're in danger of the fires of hell. Oh, there's a couple of happy verses for you. Because I don't know about you, but I break those all the time. I don't call people idiots. I do call them morons, though. That is a word that comes out of my mouth on a regular basis. And he's describing anger here in three steps. Okay, the first step, the first stage, is anger directed toward another person. Now, I get mad at myself all the time. I'll be doing something at work and my staff will hear me, stupid Jerry. I get mad at myself all the time because I have a tendency to do things that aren't very smart. You ever looked at yourself and thought, you're too smart to do that? Okay, just me. Because you're all looking at me like, no, never, ever. Remember what happens if you lie in church. Okay. Anyone who's angry with his brother is subject to judgment. And that is that's worthy of the same penalty as murder. If you're angry with someone, it's the same penalty as murder. Ouch. Because angry thoughts break the murder prohibition. And we don't think about it that way. Anger, in its simplest form, is a spontaneous response that has a vital function in life. Somebody hits you, you get angry. There's a reason for you getting angry. First of all, it puts you in what they call fight or flight mode. Physiologically, your body goes into fight or flight mode. Your adrenaline starts pumping up. Your muscles tense. Your systems actually start giving parts to more blood flow to parts of your body that you need to either fight or flight. It's the way God designed you. When you get angry, those things physiologically happen. You ever notice when you get angry, you feel kind of flush? More oxygen gets pumped to your brain, so you know you're able to look at things. I can remember hearing about people in bad situations where they said it seemed like everything slowed down. It is. In your brain is processing things so fast, it slows everything down so you get a chance to figure out what you're going to do. You're either going to fight your way out of it or you're going to run. Okay, so physiologically, we're wired for this. The problem becomes when we get past that physiological response and we start harboring it. We don't just get angry, we stay angry. Even Jesus got angry. He goes to the money changers in the temple, people who are getting in the way of other people getting to God, and he starts kicking the tables over. I had a kid tell me one time, wait a second. You said anger is a sin, and here's Jesus, and they said Jesus didn't sin, but he's kicking over tables. What do you call that? And I said, you know what I call that? I call that restraint. Wait a second, he's kicking over tables. He's beating guys with rope. I said, yeah, but if he wanted to, he could have called lightning bolts out of heaven and killed them all. Trust me, if I had the ability to call lightning bolts out of heaven, there'd be a lot of charcoal briquettes laying around. Boom. Smoking hole in the ground. There you are. Pretty sure that's why God has not given me that ability. The problem is that our anger, though, turns quickly to something more evil. It includes thoughts of inflicting pain on people, either physically or emotionally. You ever get angry with somebody and tell them something that you know is going to hurt them? Sure. Because why? Why do we do that? Because we want them to feel as bad as we feel. Does it ever help? Never. All you've done is throw gasoline on a fire. All you've done is make things worse. Jesus said we shouldn't even allow ourselves to become angry enough to consider harming somebody. Clarence Darrow said this, everyone is a potential murderer. I love this quote. Everyone is a potential murderer. I have not killed anyone, but I frequently get satisfaction from out of obituary notices. Okay? I haven't killed anybody, but I have read the paper where somebody died and thought, oh, good. That's just harsh. And if that's not a portion, that's not a way of murdering somebody, I don't know what is. Anger is as serious as murder in the heart, and it's dangerous. Who'd you get angry with at Christmas this year? Your Aunt Matilda? And now, you may have an aunt, her name isn't Matilda, but we all have that aunt that we all wish would get lost on the way to Christmas dinner. Amen or ouch? Christmas is one of those times where, in fact, I tweeted it last week, I came across a quote, that Christmas is a time when we drive an hour to see people we won't see the rest of the year, and we're happy about it. Got quiet in here. If you leave your anger unchecked, it comes to the second part, the second stage, and that's contempt for the other person. Verse 22, Jesus says, if you call someone an idiot, you're in danger of being brought before the court. Now, the Greek word for this here is raka. Raka, it means literally empty-headed. You're empty-headed. We watched, Lynette and I watched UHF last night, the old Weird Al Yankovic movie, where the karate instructor keeps saying, you're so stupid! And you ever just look at somebody and think, you're so stupid? You can't say that. And the linguists think that the word raka actually came, because it doesn't really have an etymology, it doesn't really come from anything. They think it came from the same sound that you would make when you were going to spit on somebody. They honestly think that's where it came from. That whole idea, you're not even worth spit. I'm going to spit on you. That's really contemptible. Years ago in the NFL, J.J. Stokes from the 49ers got spit on by Bill Romanowski of the Raiders. Tells you a lot about the Raiders. And I'll never forget one of the guys on ESPN saying, if you spit on me in a game, you're going to fight me now. You're going to fight me on the next play. You're going to fight me in the locker room after the, or in the hallway after the game. You're going to fight me in the parking lot. I'm going to fight you every chance I get because that is just contemptible. You don't spit on another person. And Jesus is saying it's the same thing. If you call somebody an idiot, you're spitting on them. You're showing, I have so much contempt on you, of you, I'm just going to spit on you. Wow. Please, do not test me on this one. I don't think I would handle it well. My grandpa had a guy spit on him once. Just walked up to him on the street. My grandpa was pastoring a church in Lee Summit, Missouri. The guy's wife had come in and given her heart to the Lord, and the guy didn't like it, and he walked up to grandpa all drunk, And he spit on his face. I looked at Grandpa, what'd you do? And he said, well, I stood there for a second, thought about all the things I could do to him, and decided I would do the godly thing and just stand there. And the guy spit on him again. Grandpa took his handkerchief out, wiped his face, and told the man, I still love you. 2 months later, the man came to the church, broken, wept at the altar. He eventually became a deacon in that church. I guarantee you, if Grandpa had slugged him back or spit back at him, that man had still, he would have died in his sins. But instead, Grandpa did the godly thing. Was it hard? I told him, I don't think I could have done it. He said, well, it had to be God or I wouldn't have either. See, in those moments where we're tested like that, why don't we go to God? Why don't we go to God for help? Instead, we just let our adrenaline kick in. We let our ugly self kick in instead of doing the godly thing. Is it easy? No. I'm not telling you any of this is easy. The easy thing is to slug them. The easy thing is to raise your right hand and say, and quote that scripture says, Lord, let my hand, whatever my hand finds to do, let it do with all its heart, amen. And then thump them. Then at least you're a little bit spiritual when you hit them, but not much. What we've got to do is become like Jesus at that point. That's the hardest thing to do. Instead of today, we use raka, we use the word idiot, moron, bonehead, or something sexual. We'll say something even more of a curse word toward them. But the intent is always the same. It's to show the person how much contempt you have for that person. Jesus said that people who express contempt are guilty enough to be judged by the Sanhedrin. That's the highest court in the land. Then we come to the third stage, malice toward the other person. It says, and if you curse someone, you're in danger of the fires of hell. Have you ever had somebody hurt you and you look at me and say, man, I hope he gets his? You wait, God's going to punish you. You ever told anybody that? God's going to get you for that. There was a comedy show years ago where the famous tagline for the lady was, God will get you. And we're going to take joy in that? We're going to take joy in somebody being cursed? You ever tell me to go to hell? You're cursing them. You're wishing them to be hurt, to be eternally separated from God. That's what that means. You ever look at somebody who's hurt you and said, God, we always try to couch it in religious terms, don't we? Yea, verily, Father, wouldst thou rain down judgment on his life? Because, Lord, I want him to be saved. You're a liar and your breath stinks. You're just mad and you want God to hurt him. Like God is somehow the big bully in heaven. Like God's the enforcer, like Vinny from The Godfather or something. Yo, I heard you messed up my friend. I'm going to take care of that right now. God's not the big bruiser in heaven. When we curse people, we hope the tragedy befalls them. We pray the tragedy befalls them. And then what happens if it happens? Now we feel guilty. Oh man, I didn't mean it. And I told you this story before, and I wasn't going to tell this morning, but I'm going to. When I was, golly, how old was I? 9, 10, something like that. My dad had left our family already and had found a new family, and I hated my stepmother. I hated her passionately because I somehow let my dad off the hook and thought that she's the one who broke up my home. Well, it took two to tango. Dad split. And she ended up pregnant. And I was 10 years old, 11 years old, something like that. Had to be 10 because it's about the same size. Anyway, I walked up to her, and with every ounce of my being, I meant this. I looked at her and said, I hope your baby dies. I could not have been more serious. I honestly hoped that baby would die inside her. That's how full of hatred I was. He didn't die. But a few months later, he was born, and then they found out he was deaf. And I couldn't help but believe that somehow my curse had something to do with that. Now, you know, looking back at it now, obviously it didn't, I think. I don't think I have that kind of power. Otherwise, there'd be people in Walmart dropping off like flies. That lady in the coffee aisle, dead. She's looking at Starbucks. That's the big one, Martha. I may need counseling. I'm not positive. I may need mental help. I don't think I had the power, and I don't think God listened to my, you know, 10-year-old bitterness and said, okay, I'm not going to kill the baby, but I will make it be born. I don't believe that. But my words came out, and I felt like I was somehow responsible. That hung over my heart for years. You don't want that kind of pain. You don't want that kind of anger. You don't want that kind of guilt. The Pharisees would never commit murder. But they were angry enough at Jesus to have him killed, but they got someone else to do it. They kept the rules, but they overlooked the intentions. We do that. And again, we somehow couch it in spiritual terms. Well, Lord, you know, I know that judgment day is coming for them. And Father, I just pray that, you know, you'll judge them and then they'll come to know you, Jesus. We throw the they'll come to know you, Jesus, in to make us feel better. Bottom line is, we just want something really bad to happen to them. Call them an idiot. We want something, we curse them. We want something bad to happen to them. Jesus said, you have murdered them. I want you to go back and think about the last person you got really harsh with and ask yourself if you've murdered them with your mouth, with your words, with your thoughts, with your heart. Jesus said, look, it's not possible for people with that kind of attitude to be holy. It's not possible for people with attitudes like that to be righteous. Now, we use the term righteous, and it's a real theological kind of term. Righteous just means right standing. It's like balancing your checkbook. You ever balance your checkbook? It's depressing sometimes, isn't it? Oh, I got a lot of month left over and there's no money. Okay? But balance your checkbook. Okay, here the bank says I have this. Here's what I say I have. I've got to reconcile that. I've got to bring that. Because if I can just keep spending money and the bank's going to say, you don't have that money, knucklehead. Raka, you don't have that money. Moron, you can't spend what you don't have. The government, for some reason, doesn't have to live by that rule. But anyway, everybody else. Badger. Okay? Everybody else, look, if you just keep writing checks, well, I thought it was okay to spend the money. I still had checks left. Well, okay, it's not like they come to your house and take the checks away. Sorry, you only have a penny left. I'm taking all your checks. Can you imagine if the bank showed up at your house? Oh, well, okay. Take away your debit card, you get it back at the end of the month. People who think this way are out of harmony with God. People who curse people, who allow their anger to turn into malice, are anything but in tune with God. And you would think, okay, wait a second, Jerry. So does that mean if I call somebody a moron, I'm going to hell? No. What we're talking about here is the attitude of your heart. We want a heart that values what Jesus values, and that's the life of the person. Never forget that everybody you're mad at, Jesus died for. Victor and I have an argument, and he says things that hurt my feeling because he's cutting that way. No, okay? If Victor hurts my feelings, and I get mad at him, and I want something really bad to happen to him, I need to keep in the back of my mind that Jesus died for him. That changes everything. Your Aunt Matilda, Jesus died for her. Your dad that hurt you so badly, Jesus died for him. Jesus died for them. And if Jesus saw enough to die for them, why can't you love them? Because I guarantee you, nothing they've done to you is as bad as what we've done to Jesus. Imagine, if you will, every time you get angry at somebody, you hear Jesus' voice in the back of you saying, hey, I gave my life for them. That guy you just called an idiot, I love him. He's so valuable to me that even if he was the only person that needed saving, I'd still die for him. And you're going to make my creation, you're going to make the person that I love feel insignificant and less than you? No, what you should be doing is making them feel more important than you. What you should be doing is looking them at them with my eyes and seeing them with my love and realizing that hurt people hurt people. I want you to think about, I heard that years ago from a guy, and I'll never forget that. He's talking about us, you know, lashing out, and he said, hurt people hurt people. Think about the nastiest person you know, the one who's always mean and vindictive. I guarantee you, they're miserable inside. Somebody has devastated them, and the only way they know how to deal with it is to bring other people down to their level. Guarantee it. If we could just know that out of that hurt, they're speaking. And instead of getting mad at them, we could look at them and say, wow, I feel so bad for you. I feel so sorry for you. Because you're poisoning every relationship you have. And it's all because you're hurt and don't know how to handle it. Stephen Covey said, seek first to understand and then to be understood. My job is to understand you first and then see if you can understand me. Trust me, if you're married, that's the way it's got to be. Lynette, I've been married 30, I can't keep track anymore. 33, 34, it's been a long time. I gave up understanding her a long time ago. I know how things are. I don't understand them. I don't know why certain things are the way they are. I just know they are. And somehow accepting that has made life easier. All the husbands are like, amen. Either that or they're afraid to say it because they know that that's one of the things their wife won't understand. It's okay, guys. We need to understand how Jesus feels. And I put this here. Jesus is operating at heart level where anger grows. Anger embraced and allowed to grow through these three stages is dangerous and serious. I read a story about a guy who was a snake charmer. And his trick was he had this huge boa constrictor. And he would say, coil! And this huge boa constrictor would wrap all around him. I mean, that's kind of creepy. First of all, snakes are wrong. Snakes are creepy. There's a reason why in the Garden of Eden, it was a snake that was the devil. You know, I think there's a reason there. Anything that moves like that, doesn't have legs, is wrong. It's just wrong. So my kids wanted a snake. Dad, can we get a snake? No. I would never sleep. All night I would think the snake was wrapping around me and killing me. It's only a garter snake. I don't care. Kill it. Kill it with fire. I don't want snakes around me. But his thing was, he would let this boa constrictor wrap around, and he would say, coil. And like a little trained dog, this boa constrictor would coil around him, and then he'd say, release. And the boa constrictor would release off of him. One night, he's doing the trick, and he says, coil. And the boa constrictor says, I think I'm tired of this. And he coils around the guy, and the guy says, release. And he won't release. And he says, release. Really, please, release. Release. Help me. The end of the Fly movie? Okay, anyway. It kills him. Backstage, a guy who knew him was telling a reporter, you know, when he was when he first got that snake, the snake was tiny. So tiny the man could have crushed the snake in his hands. He said, but he kept playing with him, and eventually it cost him his life. I will tell you that anger that's left unchecked, yeah, you can crush it when it's tiny, but you wait till later, you're the one that's going to pay the price. You're the one who's going to be hurt. All right, so there's all the bad. So what do? Fix it immediately. Take action immediately. First thing, settle things with others before attempting to worship. Sunday morning, remnant band's getting ready to play. They start singing a song, and right in the middle of it, you realize, oh man, somebody's mad at me. I did something that hurt somebody. Go. Fix it. Lord, remind me of this, and I will take care of this. No, go now. Go fix it. Leave church. If some of you get up and walk away, I understand. You're like, I'm not getting up now. I'm not even going to the bathroom. I'm just going to hold it. I hope I can make it to the end. Look at Matthew 5, 24, 23 and 24. I love doing this. This is so fun. Okay. So if you're presenting a sacrifice at the altar in the temple and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar. Go and be reconciled to that person, then come and offer your sacrifice to God. Worship becomes worthless if we're harboring anger in our heart. If we know we've wronged somebody and don't make it right, our worship is meaningless. Go take care of it. I've honestly seen people on messages like this get up out of church and go make phone calls. I called my dad after camp one year. Told him I was sorry that I hated him. Because I did. And he knew it. And I didn't get the response I was looking for. Because I had called my mom. She cried. Oh, I love you. I called my dad. Okay, thanks. He hung up. It was not what I was expecting. I wanted there to be some kind of reconciliation. I even found out 2 years later that he cried the rest of the night. Just wasn't going to show it. I want to tell you two things about making things right. Number one, as far as the offense goes, so goes the apology. It's not going to do any good for me to walk up to Victor and say, you know, I've always hated you. And Victor had no idea. Victor thought we were friends. I walk up and say, yeah, you know, I've really hoped you'd die a few times. Victor's like, oh, okay, well, it's going to make Sundays awkward. But if I'm ugly to Victor, and I'm abusive to Victor, and I'm mean to Victor, and Victor, obviously there's something wrong between us, I need to go make that right with him. And by the way, if I've wronged him publicly, like I'm probably going to have to after this service, if I've wronged him publicly, I need to go publicly and apologize to him. If I jump all over him in front of a group of people, I need to go to that same group of people and say, I'm sorry, I did wrong. Because it's really the chicken way out, isn't it? We'll yell at somebody and say something ugly to them in front of a bunch of people. Then we'll go to them privately and say, hey, I'm sorry. Well, there's 25 people over there that heard you say that. Oh, but they're okay. No, you need to go to those 25 people. And we'd rather gargle razor blades than do that. But we need to. 1 John 4, 20-21, if someone says, I love God, but hates a brother or sister, that person is a liar. Don't you love the way the Bible puts stuff? Because there's a lot softer ways it could have put this. You know, they're not really being honest with themselves. No, they're a liar. You're a liar. For if we don't love people we can see, how can we love God whom we cannot see? And he has given us this command, those who love God must also love their Christian brothers and sisters. That means this group right here. That means the people you work with, that, you know, we got to love them. And this verse, by the way, just deals with Christian brothers and sisters, but there's plenty of verses that says we need to love everybody the way Jesus loved them. Next thing Jesus says, settle things before you go to court. That's a good idea. Matthew 5:25, when you're on the way to court with your adversary, settle your differences quickly. Otherwise, your accuser may hand you over to the judge, who will hand you over to an officer, and you'll be thrown into prison. And if that happens, you surely won't be free again until you've paid the last penny. In Jesus' time, in fact, all the way into early England, they had what called debtor's prison. In fact, if you watch Scrooge over the weekend or the holiday weekend, one of the things that he says at the beginning is, well, just throw all these people. They said, we need help for orphans and poor people. He said, throw them into prison. That was his thing. Just throw them into prison. What do I care? Here's the thing. If you owe somebody money and they put you in prison, how are you ever going to pay that money back? In those days, they didn't even feed you. People had to bring you food. It's not like you could make license plates in prison back in the day. Well, I'm going to make little Damascus license plates. Carve them out of wood. No, you just stay there and you rot till you stay there till you die or until somebody pays your bill. And what he's saying here is, look, if you've got something and it's going to court, you need to make that right before you go to court because you don't know what's going to happen with the jury. You don't know what the judge is going to say. I tell you, I see it all the time at the sheriff's office. People will get mad because the district attorney will go for a lesser charge, but they don't know what a jury's going to do. So sometimes it's better to get some jail time than all the jail time you want for them. When I first got to the sheriff's office, they used to frustrate me. Now I see some wisdom in it. I've seen too many juries just decide that they don't want to do the right thing. Jesus said, this is urgent business. Anger can turn you into a hypocrite. It can also land you in jail. Jesus says, if you got a problem with somebody, do it right now. Don't wait till you get to court. Now, what if the person refuses to be reconciled? What if you go to somebody and they say, well, I don't care, I'm still mad at you. Am I never going to go to church ever again because this guy has something against me? I guarantee you there are people who don't like me. I guarantee it. And again, if you listen to me very long, it's not hard to figure out why. I have church board members from churches I've pastored that still think I'm the worst human being that walked the planet. All right. God bless you all over your face. And as much as I could, I've gone to them and made those things right. You know, this person and I had a disagreement about how a church should be run, and I went and tried to make it right, and they just basically thought that, well, you're stupid, go away. Okay. So do I never get to go to church again? Do I never get to worship ever again? No, because I did what God asked me to do. I can't control that other person, and neither can you. You're going to go to your Aunt Matilda and say, hey, I'm sorry, Christmas was awkward. And she says, yeah, well, fine, I'm never coming to your house ever again. She has to take responsibility for her attitude there. You've done what you need to do. And there are some questions I want you to ask. Before you just say, well, I did everything I could do. Wait a second. Some questions. First of all, does our heart long for reconciliation? Do you really want to be reconciled to this person? Or are you just like the 5-year-old that's saying sorry on the playground? Bobby hit Johnny. Bobby, tell Johnny you're sorry.
Sorry.
You don't mean that.
Sorry. But if I get another chance, I'm taking it. Sorry, but if I see you in the playground afterward, I'm going to hit you in the head with a dodgeball.
You don't mean it. See, for this to count, you must really, really, in your heart, want to be reconciled to that person. You're not just making good. Because sometimes we do that. All right, God, I don't want to, but I'll go talk to him, tell him I'm sorry. Save your breath, because it doesn't count. It's got to be in your heart. Your heart has to break for the sin that got you to that spot. couch? Have we done all that we can? Honestly, have we honestly done all that we can? I love when people do something wrong to somebody and then come to them and say, man, I'm sorry. I know I took your money. Are you going to pay the money back? Well, I'm not paying you money back. I still got your money. Sorry. It doesn't count. Have you really done everything you can to make it right? Do we act lovingly toward the other person? Wow. Wow. Guys, you know what? Never mind. I'm just not even going to say it. Okay? I'll say it and you guys can just put it on me. You ever go to your wife and say, what's wrong, honey? Nothing. Trust me, gentlemen. When your wife says nothing like that, something is going on. There is no such thing as nothing said that way. Guarantee it. You ever give somebody the silence treatment because you don't like what they did? Well, I'm not mad anymore, but I'm not talking to them. I got news for you. You're still mad. Do we act lovingly toward that person? The hardest thing I did after I made some attempts to get things right with my dad, the hardest thing I did was end phone calls with him by saying, I love you, Dad, because I knew he wouldn't say it back. But in my heart, I did love him, and I wanted him to be made whole, and I knew he was hurting, and I knew there's all this stuff, so I would always tell him, I love you, Dad. And he always would say, okay, and he'd hang up the phone. It wasn't until my dad was literally in the hospital on his deathbed, eaten alive by cancer, that I heard my dad say, I love you. And, you know, there are a lot of people who say, well, it's too late. And you know what? And it is. But I treasured that moment. For whatever reason drove him to do it, whether it was guilt or whatever, he said it. I don't hang up the phone with my boys without telling them I love them. Because that is my heart telling them how I feel about them. A country western song a few years ago now. Well, I can never say the words, but you know I love you. Wimp. A real man is able to say the words, I love you. And guys, if you can't say that, wow, I cannot believe the phrase that almost came out of my mouth right then. Not necessarily a church phrase, but you know what I mean. Guys, your kids should never, ever guess that you love them. Your wife should never, ever guess that she loves you. The old man and old lady, been married all those years, and the lady said, you never tell me you love me. He said, I told you once. If anything changes, I'll let you know. I hope you got a comfortable couch. Do we act lovingly toward that person? This is the hard one. Do we mourn for the harm that the person's anger is doing toward his own soul, to us and the others around us? When somebody is acting out, when they're so angry, when they say so many things wrong, do you stop and not worry about what it's doing to you? Do you worry about what it's doing to them? Because isn't that love? Isn't love saying, I'm going to put aside what's going on with me. I want to think about you. Every time you curse Jesus, every time you turned your back on him, every time you said things and did things that hurt Jesus, every time it happened, Jesus didn't say, oh, that devastates me. What he saw, what he said, what he felt in his heart was, that hurts them so bad, I wish they wouldn't do that. When you get to that spot where you can say that about a person and they still won't reconcile with you, you've done your job. I wish you could see what you're doing and how it's hurting you and everyone else. Not me, everyone else. You may never voice that to them. God may never give you that opportunity. And don't force it. You know, somebody calls you something at work. Well, I'm just praying for you because I just know what God, you know, how angry you must be and how hurt you're hurting yourself.
Okay, yeah, whatever.
When God gives you the right time, you'll know it and you'll step right through. Can I be involved in a court battle and still be a Christian? Yes. That's not the point here. The point here is, have you done everything you can do in your heart to make things right? Sometimes it gets out of your hands, you've done everything you can do, and it still goes south. That's when you just pray that God has his hand over everything and you're doing what God wants you to do. Remember, you can't change the other person. You can only change you. I can't make somebody like me. I can just do my best to be likable. When George W. Bush was governor of Texas, he had to deal with a lot of conflict. Both houses of Congress in Texas were against him. So early in his term, he met with the opposition leader of the legislature and hoped that they could somehow build a consensus. Well, the meeting went horrible. It was obvious that this guy was this way and George W. Bush was this way. So they finally got... Can't believe you did this. I finally got up. Meeting's over, and it's just really, really gone poorly. And it's obvious nothing good's going to happen. And as the other guy's walking out the door, he reaches out to shake George Bush's hand. George Bush grabs him and plants a big old kiss on the guy. And the guy says, "Why did you do that?" He said, "Well, you know what? Everything else went so bad, I figure I might as well get a kiss out of it." And you know what? The guy started laughing. And they ended up building a great consensus and doing some great things in their state. Why? Because he went the extra mile. Now, I'm not telling you to walk around kissing people. Your boss at work comes and yells at you, walk up and give him a big old kiss. At the sheriff's office, that'll get you shot. You want to get shot? That's how you get shot. Right there. Maybe you don't work around people with guns. I do all day. So I got to be careful about some of that. But the attitude of it, to embrace somebody, to do what you can when you can. I love this quote. You can't change what's going around you until you start changing what's going on within you. You can't change other people. But you can change yourself. So what now? What's your action point? What do you need to do today in response to Jesus' words? Very simply, it's this. Leave now and settle a dispute. Now, none of you are gonna. But I guarantee you, when you're done here, go. Because it's not weird if you go do it. It's weird if you don't. Our pride gets in the way, doesn't it? I'm not about to stand up now. All right. Just know that the longer you stay in that anger, the longer you run the risk that that will never be made right. Yeah, and I'm not trying to be melodramatic, but how do you know that by the time you get around to it, that person hasn't gone? That person hasn't passed away or is somehow unreachable? Don't put off to tomorrow what you need to do today. This is not the time for procrastination. Ask God to forgive me for the harsh words I've spoken against someone. Anybody here need forgiveness? Give my anger to Jesus instead of embracing it. God, I'm so hurt. I'm so angry. I just want to kill this person, God. But God, I'm going to give that anger to you. Because you're the one that knows how to handle it. And you know what's going to happen? You will feel such freedom when you walk away from that. I said it a few weeks ago that unforgiveness is like taking poison and waiting for the other person to die. You're angry at somebody, so you hold it against them. You carry this anger and this hatred and this bitterness. You're the one paying the price. They're just walking around fat, dumb, and happy. They don't know any different. You're dying. Finally, drop the righteous act and let Jesus change my heart. I'm going to quit acting like I got all the answers and admit before God, I need help. Look, I know people get hurt. I know that we get devastated. I get that. What are you going to do about it? See, you can walk out of here angry. You can walk out of here bitter. You can walk out of here with nothing having changed in your life except the fact that you're basically killing yourself inside. Or you can walk out of here free. It just comes down to whether or not you're willing to let God do it inside of you. It comes down to whether or not you're willing to pay the price.
You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us at remnantchurchonline.com.